Good Thursday there, football fans, and welcome to the Soccer Central podcast, the final Thursday edition of the Premier League season. We might come back around Euro, perhaps.
Yeah.
John Molinaro, right?
Yeah, yes. I think we will.
Yeah, we're not sure the plans just yet.
We got to figure it out.
We know that people need to hear from us. We've got to serve the people, their footballing news, opinion. Well,
let's all have a slice of humble pie.
Yeah, of course. Of course we have to. We're down to the wire. It's it. And there's not much to fight for, but what there is to fight for is just enormous. Obviously, top four football, Champions League. Will it be City? Will it be United? We'll get to that very shortly. With our special guest, an extremely special guest, actually. A man who, as much as Leicester was a big story, really just overshadowed that weekend by announcing the bombshell. He was indeed retiring at the end of the season. Our very own Jerry Dobson. Jerry, how's it going?
Well, first of all, I'm anything but special. I'm just some guy who happened to do soccer for 18 years at Sportsnet, and that's that. But there's no speciality with me.
I would totally second that. That's absolutely true.
I would say in this business, being a soccer broadcaster in this non-soccer market and dodging the bullets makes you very special indeed, actually.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's a lot better than it was, and there's a lot more room, actually, for soccer broadcasters than there was when I first started into it, because back in the day, nobody was doing soccer. I mean, nobody. I mean, TSN, yes, with all due respect to Graham Leggett, they had Soccer Saturday, but that was it, and so there was no other soccer positions available for anybody. So at least the climate has changed in that regard, although it is a very tough economic climate in the broadcast industry in general, I will grant you that.
Can you talk about that, Jerry? Sportsnet launched in 98, I believe, and you were there from day one as the soccer host, play-by-play. How did that come about originally?
Well, the way it was originally was that when we launched in the fall of 1998 as a new network, we were hungry for sports programming because you have to fill the airwaves with something. And at the time, there wasn't a whole lot out there, although we did do a landmark deal with the NHL back at the beginning, but there just wasn't enough to go around or enough to fill the airwaves. And Scott Moore had this idea about broadcasting the English Premier League. Scott Moore was the VP of programming, or VP of production, pardon me, at the time. And he called me about, I would say, maybe 2 weeks before we went on the air. And he said, "Somebody told me you know something about soccer. Is that true?" And I said, "Well, a little bit." I said, I follow it as best I can. I said, "I don't broadcast a whole lot of it because there just wasn't much going on." But I had covered the Toronto Blizzard for Global Television way back in the 1980s when I was there and when the NASL was a growing concern. And so I said, "Yeah, I have my hand in it a little bit." And he said, "Good, because I just did a three-year deal to broadcast English Premier League games, and I'd like you to be the host." And I said, "Great, no problem." And so Sportsnet, the network, launched on a Thursday evening in October, and on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, I was in the studio, and we were doing our first Premier League game, and we've been doing it ever since.
Jeez, it really came together that quickly.
Yeah, it really was that fast. Now, I can't say for certain when the deal with Sportsnet and the Premier League was done, but I know that Scott called me a couple of weeks before we went on the air, and I think the deal had been done not long before that. So it was fairly late coming together. And boom, we were on the air, and it was fly by the seat of your pants there for a while, but that's how it began.
Wow. Jerry, I think one of the, I don't want to use the word iconic, but, well, I guess I will. One of the iconic partnerships, I guess, in Canadian sports broadcasting, you and Craig. How did that come about? How did the partnership evolve? And when you look back at your sort of relationship and working with Craig, what's it been like?
Well, it's been fantastic over the years, to be honest. As you can imagine, it probably is. The way it came about was, for the first 4 years of doing the Premier League, it was just me flying solo. And for the first couple of years, there was no Soccer Central program. There was no second game of the day. It was simply on the air with one game and then sign off. And then a couple of years into the deal, we decided to launch the half-hour Soccer Central program. And then I think maybe a year after that, my timeline might not be exact, but sometime in that first 4 years, we decided to add the second game. And then when we did that, the feeling was, this is too much for one guy. We need to have an analyst on there because there's just so much going on and there's room for an analyst. And so Craig had just retired, and was looking to come back to Canada and get into the broadcast business. And so I guess to make a long story short, his people called our people, and they did a deal. And then Scott or Craig was in the chair with me starting in 2002, just as he came out of retirement. And he's been with us ever since, obviously. So I've been with Craig in the studio for 14 years. And when you're with somebody every week, every year for 14 years, you either hate each other or you get along really well. And I would have to say that it's the latter with Craig and I. We get along well on so many fronts. I mean, we've traveled together so much, staying in the same hotel, eating in the same restaurants, flying in the same planes, traveling in the same cars. We play golf together all the time. Some people think we live together. but you know what? It's true. It's funny how people are, because I'll get stopped somewhere in a shopping mall or out in the street or wherever it might be, and the guy will say to me, "Yeah, so where's Craig?" And it's like, you know what? I really don't know where Craig is right now because we don't live together. But it has been a pretty good bond. I'd like to think it's a special bond that we've developed over the years. We get along well on the air and off the air, and it's been a blast over these years.
It is amazing because, you know, Craig is so abrasive. And hard
yeah,
to get
totally.
Usually
he's.
Yeah, he's a hard guy to get along with, isn't he, our Craig Forrest?
Hey, Jay, talk about the audience, Kenya, how it's changed, you know, from those first days in 98, 99 to now where there's so much football available. You know, I've seen in my career that the game grow exponentially, not just domestically, but especially internationally, how there are, you know, soccer shirts from around Europe on the streets of Toronto, Vancouver, they're everywhere. You can't escape it. How's your audience changed since those days?
Well, I think, James, over the years, it's become a lot larger, obviously. And we always knew that the appetite was there. We weren't sure how large the appetite was, I guess, and we found out. Because what I would say that has happened over the years is that we get fewer and fewer complaints about not showing enough soccer. Now, we get lots of complaints, as you well know. Some of them directed personally
oh, yeah.
at us. But I don't think we get as many complaints about not showing enough. Yes, people will complain, why isn't this game on this channel or aren't you showing that game? But we used to get inundated with complaints about, I can't believe you're only showing the one game, or when are you going to start showing this league, or when are you going to start showing Champions League, or when are you going to start showing this or whatever. And that stuff has died down because there is so much soccer on the air, not just us, but with TSN, obviously. There is so much soccer available out there that I think we've finally started to satisfy the appetites of the soccer fan. But also, back in those days, James, if you didn't have a soccer program to show soccer highlights and do soccer interviews, none of that stuff was getting on the air because the regular sports highlight programs weren't touching it at all. I mean, we had a devil of a time getting our own highlights on the air in the news programs. Well, now you see what's happening in the news, sports news programs all the time, is it's there front and center. But that never used to be the case. And the audience has grown, the appetite has grown, and it's completely different than what it was 10 to 15 years ago.
Jerry, I don't think I'm blowing smoke your way when I say this, but you've been, I think, a very passionate and vocal advocate for Canadian soccer over the many years. When you think about, you know, where the coverage of this, how the coverage in this country with regards to Canadian soccer has developed over the years, it really is quite startling. And I think you've played a prominent voice in that. When you started kind of covering, you know, the Canadian team in depth, what was the pushback like? I mean, how hard was it to really kind of give these guys and the women's team for that, or the Canadian programs just in general, the coverage that you obviously felt it deserved?
Well, first of all, you're too kind, John. Because
well, I know.
I'm just some guy doing the job that I'm assigned to do. And when I get into, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing, I get in with both feet and I believe in doing it properly, or at least the best that I can do it. But when it comes to Canadian soccer, the second thing to that is, I guess, is I am a very, very proud Canadian. First and foremost, I'm five generations Canadian on one side of the family and three generations Canadian on the other side of the family. So I am Canada through and through, and I wear the maple leaf on my sleeve. So I love to promote Canadian, no matter what it is, whether it's Canadian soccer, whether it's Canadian industry, whether it's Canadian-made chairs for your dining room. I'm so proud to be Canadian. So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is when it comes to pushback over coverage of the team, I don't know if pushback is the right word. It's almost I can't come up with a single word, but it's a combination of things. It's a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding, and a lack of caring, I think, apathy towards something that people didn't know. And mainstream media did not know much about soccer, and there's also a fear of not knowing about something. And when there's a fear, you stay away from it because you don't want to embarrass yourself by covering something you don't know anything about. And I think there was some of that in the early days as well, and people just not paying attention or not understanding the importance of it. And, of course, the results of the Canadian team didn't help matters because we weren't getting results. So that was a factor as well. But I just believe wholeheartedly in the program, despite its flaws and despite our country's flaws as a soccer nation. I just believe that there's that the potential is there and that it's worth covering as a Canadian.
Tell you, Jerry, you cover Canada. You mentioned there some pretty poor times, with the results. You covered TFC. Since their inception, and I forget that the stats you told me once upon a time how many few goals you've actually called from TFC and how many few wins. Tell me the highlight, perhaps, and the low light of your career in soccer media, because I know you've been around the world with the Canadian team. You've seen some great moments, but a lot of pretty poor moments and tough moments right to stomach.
Well, in terms of high moments, you know, I think it's a collection of things, James, because the sport and covering the sport in this country has allowed me, like you say, to travel the world and see some great places. I've been all over the United States. I mean, when you talk about, first of all, cities that you've been to the United States, like I can't name a major city in the United States that I haven't been to several times. I've seen them all and all the tourist things that they have to offer. I've been all through Latin America and Central America and the Caribbean. I've been to Europe multiple times. I've been to Turkey. I've been to Greece. I've been all over the mainland, the continent, and the United Kingdom. And when you do all of that, you really get a sense of what we have here in Canada. So, I mean, those are some of the highlights is traveling to a lot of those places. And it's not just the fact that I got to go to those places. It's the fact that I got to go to those places with some of the best professional broadcasters and production people that there is in this country. Because we have some of the best. Dan Fernandez, who produces our shows on a regular basis, I've traveled many occasions with him. Great guy, great producer, and a great traveling companion. You know, Mike DeAngelis and Aaron Lamb, who are sort of the soul of our production team, those guys are the best. So I think the highlights have to do more with places I've been and the people I've worked with than iconic moments. I guess the one iconic moment would be the Gold Cup in 2000 when Canada, you know, beat Mexico in the semifinal and then went on to win the whole thing. So that's probably the iconic moment for me calling a game. In terms of lowlights, you know, I hate to say that there is any low light. I mean, yeah, there's been some disappointments, but I would still do it all over again, no question. I mean, you mentioned TFC, and yes, Craig and I called the very first game ever against Chivas. Toronto lost, I think it was 2-0 was the score. Preki was their coach, and Mo Johnson was Toronto's coach. And we did do an awful lot of losing games in those early years. I don't have the exact numbers, but it seems to me that after the first two or three years of calling games, we had a record of like 3 wins and 30 losses or something ridiculous like that.
Jinx.
But the team didn't want to see us around anymore because we were bad news, although they were the ones who were bad news, as we know. But, you know, I can't say that those are low points because I enjoy all of that as well, and I would do it all again. I just love doing all of that kind of thing, win, lose, or draw. I guess the actual low point would be the fact that there is so much antipathy or whatever the word might be, apathy towards Canadian soccer. So many times we just beat our heads against the wall trying to get coverage, but I still love every minute of it.
Jerry, what's been the reaction since you made the announcement? I was with you at the TFC game on Saturday, and I, you know, saw a lot of people kind of come up to you and kind of wish you well, including, Jason DeVos and a bunch of other people. And I'm sure social media has blown up over this. What's been the reaction, and what's been your reaction to the reaction?
Well, the reaction that I've gotten personally, I have to admit, it's very humbling. I'm sure there's all kinds of people out there who are glad to see me go, and I don't read all of that kind of stuff because we know what soccer fans can be like in terms of how they treat the people that cover their sport because they're very protective of their sport. And I know I have my critics out there, and I won't deny that, and that's just a fact of life. But it is humbling to see so many well wishes and people that looked at me and what we do on a Saturday morning, especially as as part of the fabric of their life. Like, I guess, you know, I didn't realize that it was so long that I've been doing it, you know, a 37-year career and 18 years doing soccer on Sportsnet. When you get people sending you notes saying, I was 12 years old when I first started watching you and now I'm 30, and it's like, holy mackerel. That does sort of put it into perspective that, you know, you have been a part of somebody's life for so many years. And like I said, it's humbling almost to the point of being embarrassing because you don't realize how much of an effect you can have on people. But like I said, there's lots of people out there who are happy I'm retired, and I'm one of them.
Well, and not to get too personal, but can you explain a little bit why it's now's the time? I mean, why the decision now as opposed to next year or 2 years from now?
Well, you know, there is a combination of factors that I guess sort of came together at the same time in my life, and, you know, where I was living and where I wanted to live, and getting tired of winters and wanting to spend more time away from the cold weather in the wintertime, and just the fact that I've been doing the same thing for so long. And you get to my age, I'm in my 60s now, when you start to see, you know, people around you that aren't living any longer, you start to get more of a sense of your own mortality. And I think it's a question of, I'm still healthy, I'm still fit, my wife is healthy and fit, we're empty nesters, the kids are all gone, and there's lots of things that I want to do in this world, and I want to be able to do them when I'm still physically able to do them. I don't want to be one of these guys who hangs around till I'm 75 or 80 and then decides that's enough, and then all of a sudden my health goes and I can't do anything. I want to do things like go to the old course in St. Andrews and play that golf course. I want to hike up and down the Grand Canyon and do those kinds of things. And I'm still young enough and fit enough to be able to do it. So I figure now's the time, because you never know what is around the corner in terms of your health.
I'll tell you what, on any given weekend, there's a couple of ex-professional athletes on that set, but the fittest guy is the guy in the host chair. I tell you, it's Jerry Dobson, that's for sure.
Well, you know what, James, it's probably because I'm the oldest, and when I was the age of the younger guys, I probably wasn't thinking about it nearly as much as they are either, but the older you get, at least that's the way my life evolved, the older I got, the more I started thinking about my health. Not that I was ever unhealthy, but just you know, you want to do the right thing, put the right things in your body, and give yourself a chance to live as long as you can in a healthy lifestyle and be able to do the things you want to do.
Absolutely. Jerry, one more thing. Obviously, you've covered the Canadian national team for a long, long time, the ups and the downs. Today, big news, Vito Metagliani, the CSA president, elected as CONCACAF president. It's, I think, a huge deal for Canadian soccer. We have a power broker in our midst, and what an important occasion this is.
Oh, I would agree, James. I mean, it's a huge deal, and it's a huge deal for soccer, I think, just in general, apart from how important it is for Canada, because finally, a federation or a confederation has elected somebody who is clean, and we know that for a fact, because how many, I think it's four of the last five presidents of CONCACAF have found out to be dirty. And we just keep going down the same road in this confederation. And finally, we have somebody who's clean, from a clean, respectable country. And FIFA, it knows what they get when they come to Canada. They know what they're dealing with when they deal with Canadians. And Victor Montaliani is a perfect man for that job. He speaks multiple languages. He speaks Canadian. He speaks English. He speaks French, Italian, Spanish. He is a perfect guy for the job. And he is an aggressive guy who has always tried to do the right thing and move the game forward. I just hope that he's not so swamped with business at hand for CONCACAF that the important Canadian matters slip through the cracks. I don't think that'll be the case, but yeah, it's got to be good for soccer in this country.
Jerry, before we let you go, maybe you can just remind our audience, when's your last day? What's going on between now and September? You're still going to be doing TFC stuff, right?
Yeah, we wrap up the Premier League season on Sunday. As you guys said, that off the top, there's not a whole lot to be decided, but a couple of big things still to be decided. So we wrap up the Premier League on Sunday. And then there's 10 Toronto FC games that I have to do with, along with Paul Dolan. So we'll be doing those games scattered throughout the summer. Our final broadcast, I think, for TFC is September 10th at Chicago. So after we do that game, that will be my final broadcast. And then I'm out of your hair.
And there shall be a party, I would hope. I'm sure we'll crack some pints after that.
Well, let me put it this way. If nobody's going to have one for me, I'll have one myself.
I'm sure you will.
Fine.
Hey, Jerry, I've had the pleasure of working with you for the last couple of years. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I've certainly learned so much from you. You're a consummate professional. Thank you so much, mate. And we'll chat to you real soon.
Well, just a quick word, James, and to you too, John. You guys are both consummate professionals, and when I talk about being proud to work with some of the best people in the business, I include you guys as well, because, John, you've done a terrific job with our website over the years in the soccer department, and James, you're a pleasure to work with as well, a pro who knows the game inside out and a great television broadcaster. So thanks to you guys as well. Good job.
That's very kind of you to say, Jerry. We really appreciate it, and we're really going to miss you around here.
Thanks, pal. We'll chat soon.
Cheers.
Take care, fellas.
That is the great Jerry Dobson, a man who's saying farewell to the soccer broadcasting world this summer, but he'll be missed, that's for sure. And if I look back on my career, you know, I began as an intern in 97 at The Score, and I was always so jealous of Jerry.
Really?
Turning on, hosting Premier League
games. Right.
It was you know, fantastic. And then Craig Rives in the early 2000s, and certainly always, a show that we looked up to and almost aspire to
right.
in many ways. And, you talk about TSN and Graham Leggett
right.
for so many years. Jerry yeah. very much, I think, on the same mantle
yeah.
as Graham Leggett.
It's interesting because, I don't know if too many people know my background, but before I was at Sportsnet, I used to work at CBC. And then Sportsnet hired me away in 2011. And I remember in my final week, people at CBC, I told them, I'm obviously going to Sportsnet, and they wished me well and told them what I was doing. I was going to be working in the soccer department. But more than one person said, just beware because, you're going to be working with Dobson and he can be a bit of a prima donna or something like that. And
really?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. So I kind of kept that in the back of my mind, just thinking I should be. And I knew Jerry kind of peripherally before then, mm-hmm. saw him around TSC, but I wouldn't say we were all that close. But I'll never forget my first day at Sportsnet. I couldn't have been in my chair more than 5 minutes when Jerry came strolling into the newsroom and, and as I said, we kind of knew each other, but, introduced himself and said, welcome me with open arms and said, I'd really like to help you out with the website and this is what I'm thinking and blah, 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 blah. And in the ensuing, whatever it is, 5 or 6 years, he has been anything but a prima donna. He's just been so unbelievably helpful, going out of his way to help me just both personally and professionally. And I think he's just been a pleasure to work with. And as I said, I'm really going to miss him.
When I first came here 2 or 3 years ago now, I had some concerns, reservations, because I came from The Score. We did things so differently there.
Right.
What would be my welcome? Would they accept me, into the way they did things here? And obviously a new face, new voice into the soccer department. And I got to tell you, there was never any unease. It was seamless because of the guys already there, Craig right. and Jerry, who were just so welcoming and open arms. And had the chance to travel with Jerry last year quite a bit with TFC. And yeah, just a fun guy to travel with. We cracked a few pints over those weekends in the States, and overall a really, really fun guy to work with. And like I said before, total pro.
Yeah.
Total pro.
Yeah. It's a big loss. I mean, not just for us here at Sportsnet, but I think for Canadian soccer. And again, I kind of alluded to this during the interview, but Jerry was a very prominent, passionate advocate for Canadian soccer, during a time where some very lean years, and he was, a very sort of vocal voice. So I think anytime we lose a vocal Canadian soccer voice in this country, it's a big loss, but especially with Jerry. So as I said, he's going to be missed, but we move on.
I'm apparently. So jealous.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
You'll get there one day.
He's got some big plans, man. He's got some big plans.
You'll get there one day. Oh, you're jealous of that. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I hope he invites
his retirement.
Us. Yeah. I hope he invites us down to, because he has a condo what, in West Palm Beach.
He lives about half an hour away from the polo grounds where the Coachella Music Festival is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
jeez.
Hey, I'm knocking on the door. Hey, Jerry, can I crash on your couch for a weekend?
Yeah, I'm sure his wife, Nancy, would appreciate that.
I would love that. Be myself, you, Dan Fernandez, Mike. Hey!
Well, come crashing down, yeah.
That'd be fun. All right, this weekend will be very fun in the Premier League.
Yeah.
City at Swansea, they win, they're in. We're showing that game.
I think they actually only need a draw, don't they?
Yeah, right.
Right.
United against Bournemouth.
Right. We have the City-Swansea game.
The ball. Did they not?
Oh, massively.
On Tuesday against West Ham, we had that game as well. And you're watching that game, and they had it in their grasp defensively. And defensively, they've been okay this year. I mean, they're one of the better teams. But they couldn't defend anything direct. And, Louis van Gaal went from a guy who was potentially having an actual okay season, top four football, FA Cup final, to a guy that is now probably going to be failing in his bid to qualify for the Champions League, which makes it much easier to let the guy go.
Right.
But I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, if you were some of the legends of that team who have won it, imagine Roy Keane watching that game, wherever he was watching that game. He must have been just gnawing
or Scholes.
At Scholes. You know, yeah. These guys that knew how to win, how to put games away, big important games.
Right.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
It was. It was a terrible performance. And, you know, they threw away that game. That was a winnable game. With all due respect to West Ham, who have been, I think, one of the better stories in the Premier League this year, and this was their final game at Upton Park. But that game was there to be won for Manchester United, and I think they fell short. I can't remember if it was the first or second or the third goal, but De Gea seemed to, like, it went through him a little bit. Shouldn't he have done better in your mind?
Was it a hard shot? I think
it was
a really hard shot. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he I forget who it was now. Kone, wasn't it?
Yeah, might have.
He just got all of it.
Okay,
and
fair enough.
I was actually amazed that he got a hand to it.
Okay,
and
fair enough.
Threw him, but I know what you're saying, but just overall the defensive. I mean, Daley Blind, who's as versatile as they come, and he's played so much football this season, you can't really blame the guy, but he's playing out of position week in and week out. What do you want from the guy? You know, you have to get some centre-backs who actually are centre-backs, do you not?
I would think.
I mean, the transfer policy of that club has been a shambles since Fergie left. Obviously, from the Falcao experiment to, you know, you could even go as far as saying Memphis Depay and El Di Maria.
Yeah.
You know, there's been some major disasters transfer-wise. And, you know, why they haven't actually addressed that position more so, I don't know. They have to this summer.
I would think, yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's sometimes easier said than done, right? Because, I mean, I know there are a lot of world-class center backs out there, but a lot of them are under contract, right? So it's, and I think it'll be much more difficult now because potentially United's not going to be playing Champions League football next year. And, you know, who would want to really, I mean, sure, it's Manchester United, but is that sort of uneasiness about the situation there that might prevent a big star center back from going there.
And I thought that would be even more fascinating had it been City that failed. And they still might fail.
They still might.
I mean, listen, sure. Swansea's not easy, right? And Gridolin's done a nice job there.
Yeah.
Re-signed today, by the way, 2 more years.
But, he did.
I mean, let's assume that City are going to qualify. That's for Pep Guardiola, a big injection, because had they have failed, I mean, that would be really interesting, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Their targets this summer. I mean, they're only going for the biggest names.
Right.
And they're going to pay them regardless. But do the biggest names want to go to a team that's not playing Champions League for a season? That's a question.
I think it's a very valid point, yeah.
Really interesting. Going down, of course, Newcastle officially with Norwich and Villa after Sunderland. Found their form at just the right time, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did.
they played very well yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes.
Against poor old Everton, who have since fired Roberto Martinez.
Yeah.
No surprise there.
No, I feel sorry. I mean, I guess I shouldn't feel sorry for him, but I mean, you know, it happens all the time.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you know, he's a nice enough guy. I think it was just time for him because, you know, that first season was quite brilliant, but obviously the club has declined since he's been there. So, and as you know, the managers have a short shelf life. Mm-hmm. So
they sure do. He'll get a job somewhere else, but the shine is of him because he was seen as one of the great young managers who will one day assume the mantle of a really huge club.
Remember when he was linked to Liverpool?
Yep. It was, well, the year they got Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
It was really, if you believe the reports, between him and Rodgers.
Yeah.
And in the end, Everton, I think, got Martinez first. They hired him literally by hours or days.
Might have been pretty close, though.
And the first year, he finished fifth.
Yeah.
They were great.
Yeah.
And they're making that big step up. It's, I think it's record points haul. And then 11th last year.
Right. And they're going to finish bottom of the table this term.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's a team that needs to be rebuilt, I suppose. And this guy, that the shine is off him. He'll rebuild himself. People that play, remember Stephen Caldwell, who played with him at Wigan, or played under him at Wigan, said this guy is going to be a great manager one day.
Mm.
I'm sure he's surprised today that it's ended this way. It's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
It really is. Elsewhere in the Premier League, other stories. Well, Mourinho's still talking, apparently, with United, but we're not quite sure. He's denying any knowledge. It's about to get crazy, isn't it, the Premier League?
Yeah, it sure is.
It ends this weekend, and then between that ending in Euro starting, there's going to be a lot of speculation about a lot of players and managers.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
What do you think about Newcastle going down?
It's a shame. They're a team that they should be in the Premier League. They're a big enough team.
Right.
There's talk about Rafa staying there now. Apparently he's interest in both parties now. I think he likes it there. I mean, he loves the north of England, right? His family still lives in Liverpool. So he does commute more easily than obviously being in the continent.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy that loves to be part of football culture, and there's certainly that in Newcastle. And you can become a hero pretty quickly there.
Right.
If he sticks with them and the fans like him, I mean, he did a decent job. But he needs resources, right. And I'm not sure he's going to get that from Mike Ashley.
Did Colback, when did he join United?
Colback?
Yeah. Was it the start of the season?
No, he's been there for a
while. He's been there for a while now, or something like that? Because I saw a very funny tweet about, they kind of ran some quote from him because his previous club was Sunderland, right. I think, right?
Yeah.
And so when he left, he sort of made some disparaging remarks about Sunderland. It's like, well, they're not going to be a Premier League team much longer, and it's nice to be going to a place like Newcastle where we're always going to be in the top sort of flight and this and that. And then someone sort of tweeted out that quote yesterday after Sunderland's win relegated.
What are you thinking, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he joined in 2014.
Okay, there you go. So
from Sunderland.
And he, I mean, you reread the quote. I mean, he really does a number on Sunderland. So kind of came back to bit him in the butt here.
Yeah, you just keep your mouth shut because you never know what might happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially a team like Newcastle, who have been, you know, I think they've been there for 6 years straight, but right. They were in the league championship not so long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to lose the likes of Colback and some, I mean, perhaps they're part of the problem. The Wijnaldums, the Colbacks of the world, Iuzis. I mean, even with those players who are, we thought, pretty good players, have gone down, haven't they?
Yeah, they sure have.
Yeah, big changes there. But your thoughts on Montagliani, quickly?
Not surprised
for Canadian football.
Yeah, not surprised that he got was elected of CONCACAF. I'm pretty much in line with what Jerry said. I think it's exactly what CONCACAF needs. He's a pretty straightforward and ethical man. So I think this is great for CONCACAF in cleaning up its image. Hopefully it helps Canada land the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah, well, they say they're very interested in bidding.
Yeah, so hopefully it paves the way for that. But overall, yeah, you know, CONCACAF could hardly do a lot worse.
You need to, I think, announce your, you will be bidding 2020 is when they accept bids. So it's not for a while.
Yes, yes. It's 4 years away before the bid process starts.
But so we should be finding out quite soon about what the protocol is,
right,
and what the demands are.
And it's important to note that I think the U.S. has said that it's going to throw its hat into the ring. So yeah. That's pretty big competition.
And I mean, people say, well, a COVID, but why would the states bother with the COVID?
And that's exactly what I've always said. It's like, unless they're somehow forced by CONCACAF or FIFA to put together a bid, because what's in it for the states? They don't need us, quite frankly.
There's talk far more now about having joint bids for World Cups, which makes a lot of sense for most countries, but you're right, not for the states.
Well, and plus it eats up two automatic berths too, right? So that's not, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that might not sound like a much, but really it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Straight away, right?
Right.
Although there could be 40 teams by then.
Well, God.
It's going to happen. I'm with you. I hate the idea of that. But
I have a problem with the 32 to begin with. I say we go back to 24.
There's a lot of bad teams.
I know that's never going to happen. Hey, so
joy Euro.
Yeah. Well,
we're old school,
right?
While we're on the North American topic, Kai Kamara dealt to the Revs from Columbus after. I mean, there's more to it obviously than the disagreement with Higuain last weekend,
right,
against Montreal and the penalties. But that's a big move. Obviously, he's not been great this year. We know that, but we know what he can do.
Right.
Did you see last night Vancouver's match?
I saw highlights, yeah. Right. I saw the overhead goal and I saw the...
Yeah, they beat Chicago 2-1. Blas Perez with the brace, including a scissor kick.
Yeah.
An injury, or 88th minute, actually.
Yep.
But did you see Masada Kudo
getting
just cleaned out by the keeper?
Yeah. I don't want to sound too... Well, if you want to watch the video, it's up on Sportsnet.
Aside from leg breaks, which it's not a leg break, as far as a violent collision, it might be the worst I've seen in soccer.
Yeah.
It is awful.
Yeah.
You have to watch it.
Yeah, he basically collides with a Chicago goalkeeper going for a ball and then hits the ground hard. And as soon as he does, I'm assuming he bit his tongue. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, apparently tongue and lip, yeah. So the blood.
And so blood just instantly started pouring out of his mouth like a... Kind of like a horror movie.
Now, he walked off the field. Obviously, it's not good. It's a pretty severe concussion by the looks of things.
I think he went to the hospital. It was in Vancouver General I'm still not sure if he's there, but it was, pretty severe. He clearly has a concussion.
I watched it back a few times, and the keeper, I think he knew what he was doing. He did kind of leave his feet. He was claiming the ball.
Oh, I didn't notice.
He was claiming the ball. It's a tough game, a physical game, but he caught him real good.
Mm.
It was, pretty disturbing to watch. But like I said, it's not a leg breaker, which I can't watch. I just can't watch leg breakers. Yeah, I don't even watch them. I can't. I still haven't seen the Steve Zakuani. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's pretty...
I can't. I just heard something that's terrible. I've seen the aftermath of it, which is bad enough.
Yeah. The one I always remember as a kid was when the German goalkeeper Schumacher in the 82 World Cup, Cole cocked Battiston from France. It was like, didn't he, not even a, the faintest attempt to play the ball. Just like, it was pretty. And the funny part was, like, they ended up becoming pretty good friends. And I think Schumacher was in Battistone's wedding party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, years later.
Wow.
Or maybe it was vice versa. I can't remember.
A great wedding speech, eh?
Yeah, I know, eh? It's like,
it's awesome.
Here's the bastard who nearly killed me.
Ended my career, yeah. Thereabouts. I think the last one I saw was probably Henrik Larsson.
I don't remember that one.
No, that was for Celtic against, I think, Celta Vigo.
Oh, okay.
In the early 2000s. It's grotesque.
Oh.
And that just, I saw the game live. I wasn't there in the ground.
You saw it live on TV.
Watching, I think, Fox Sports World back in the day, I think it was. And that it was just so horrible. I try and avoid any leg breaker ever since. All right. We're out of time, J-Mo.
That flew by.
The last Thursday podcast until the next one.
Yeah. Are you guys doing the show on Monday?
Yes, no? We are. Yeah. Myself and Dunlop. Dobby is out of town, but we will wrap up the season. And then we'll return at some point, I'm sure, around Euro.
Yeah, I think that's still to be determined. We got to figure out a schedule. And plus, you're a big TV star now. So.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
But we'll figure it out. I think we'll either do one or we'll do a series of, but we'll figure it out. And we're going to have extensive coverage of Euro on sportsnet.ca. Even though we're not the rights holder, we're going to have a lot of
good, the great best coverage.
Well, those are your words, not mine. We'll have very good coverage. So be sure to check us out.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. Our thanks to Jerry Dobson, and of course, the man behind the glass, Brent Gunning. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. As always, every Thursday.
Makes us sound so good.
Yep, sure does. J-Mo, thank you.
Thanks, mate.
I'm James Sharman. Cheers for listening.